Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 4th chapter, verses 1 to 16. Maitreya vacha eta varuktva virama shankara patyanganasham hyubayatya chintayan siritiriksu parishankita bhavan nishkramati nirvishati tithasasa. Translation. The sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva was silent after speaking to Sati, seeing her between decisions. Sati was very much anxious to see her relatives at her father's house, but at the same time, she was afraid of Lord Shiva's warning. Her mind unsettled, she moved in and out of the room as a swing moves this way and that. Now Sati has pleaded with her husband to go with her to her father's grand sacrifice. Everyone in the universe is going, except me and you. I am his daughter, so why shouldn't I be invited? And anyway, even if I'm not invited, I can go to my father's house uninvited. So she gave 5 arguments, and Lord Shiva defeated all 5 of those arguments in the 3rd chapter. So what were those 5 arguments? I don't have them right here before me, but she was saying, I may go uninvited. So he said, you may go uninvited, but what if they're angry with you and they insult you? And she said, I may go to my relative's house. What's the harm? I want to go see my relatives. And he said, but what if they insult you? Again, same thing. And then she says, well, you know, you may be a pure devotee, but I'm not so advanced. I'm attached to the place of my birth. So what was the argument to defeat the... What did he say to that? Yeah. The place of your birth will be the place of your death if you go there. So, and what are some more? Oh, yes. She says, I'm half your body. So he said, yes, you're half my body, but Daksha will see that half. That's me, and he will insult you because of being half of my body. So all these arguments were defeated by Lord Shiva. And finally he said, if you don't listen to me, surely it will be equal to death. Again and again, he said, he warned her, you're going to die, actually. So now she's torn between her attachment to her father's family and her attachment to her great husband, who is warning her not to go. So therefore, she's hesitating, moving from one room to another in her indecision. So Srila Prabhupada, he cites a Bengali proverb. He says, when perplexed whether to eat or not to eat, better don't eat. Because sometimes we're thinking, well, it's time to eat, but I'm not hungry. So should I or shouldn't I? The Prabhupada says, don't do it. But if it's December, you can eat. It's okay. You can digest it. Then he says, if you're confused whether to go or not to go, then don't go. He said, but if it's a question of answering the call of nature, you must go. So this is the Bengali proverb. So common sense, this is the Bengali proverb. So verse 2, Sati felt very sorry at being forbidden to go see her relatives at her father's house. And due to affection for them, tears fell from her eyes. Shaking and very much afflicted, she looked at her uncommon husband, Lord Shiva, as if she were going to blast him with her vision. So Burijan comments, this sounds like most marriages. Prabhupada will be telling us who was right. But actually, Lord Shiva, all he did was tell her, these are the consequences of your actions. He didn't say, you know, you should do this or that, but he was just telling her, if you do this, this is what's going to happen to you. So Burijan Prabhu said that he told her something against what her mind wanted to hear. And this is all of our tendency. If we want something and somebody tries to stop us, then we want to blast them with our eyes. So Prabhupada, about the middle of the purport, he gets into the Sanskrit a little bit. First he says, apratipurusham means one who has no equal. And then later in the middle of the purport, atma. In other words, since Lord Shiva is the Atma, Shiva also means Atma, it is indicated here that Sati was prepared to commit suicide. So if you go deeply into the Sanskrit, you will see It is predicting what events are yet to come. Another meaning of the word Pratipurusha is the personality who has no rival. Since Lord Shiva could not be persuaded to give her permission, Sati took shelter of a woman's last weapon, weeping, which forces a husband to agree to the proposal of his wife. So it sounds like Prabhupada is speaking from experience here in this purport. The wife, she cries, and then the husband is forced to do what she wants. So Sati is trying that last weapon. It all came from her. She's the original wife. Yes. You don't follow? Does anybody follow? How Shiva means Atma. Bhavam. So Bhavam also means Atma. Here in the Sanskrit, the word is Bhavam, Shiva. So another meaning of Shiva is Atma. Yes?
Yeah, and she's going to give him up.
And she's going to give him up, yes. She's going to give up the Atma. Give up the body. Yeah, Atma also means body, mind, soul. You can't give up the soul, but you can give up the body. So, Atma. So let's see. We're in verse 3. Thereafter, Sati left her husband, Lord Shiva, who had given her half his body due to affection. Breathing very heavily because of anger and bereavement, she went to the house of her father. This less intelligent act was due to her being a weak woman. So Prabhupada, in the purport, describes different weaknesses, womanly weakness. And if we read on in the purports and in this lila, we'll find that there are weaknesses and strengths with every different body that you have. That there are weaknesses having a woman's body, there's also strengths. And there's weaknesses having a man's body, there's also strengths. So here we find one of the weaknesses, this attachment to different families. And actually even Queen Kunti, she brought up this weakness in her prayers. Because she said, I'm not a great philosopher. I don't know. Krishna came here not for me. He came here for all these munis and those who can see the difference between matter and spirit, the paramahansas. So how can, what do I know about Krishna? But actually, she knew it. Prabhupada said she knew everything. She knew Krishna. Actually, Krishna came for her and for the Pandavas. So Kunti admitted her womanly weakness also in the form of attachment for family. I mean, she said, there's a verse, I don't know exact, I think it's number 41, this one. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please, therefore, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, Pandavas and the Vrishnas. So she had the same problem. She had two families, her husband's family, her father's family, and they were getting in the way of her love for Krishna. So therefore she prayed to Krishna that please let my love flow to you only. So here we find that Sati has a problem. She's torn between attachment between her two families. So that's why the gopis are so highly praised by Uddhava that they could give up this attachment for family, which is very, very difficult to give up, and run to Krishna. So Uddhava prays that first he was praying, let me get the mood of the gopis. But then after that he was thinking, no, I'm too far, I can never get this mood. Let me just become a creeper or an herb in Vrindavan. So when they run to Krishna, I will get the dust of their feet. So this is the actual pure devotional service. Verse 4. Yes. Due to womanly weakness, yes. In the Vedic society, right. Yeah. Okay, so here's a practical example from the life of Guru Sevananda.
Yes, but then I have a question.
No, okay.
The question is, okay, what's good? Because last time they said she was more happy in this position.
Yes.
And the children were well, took care nicely.
Mm-hmm.
But my father has good character.
Right. But what happens if it...
Yes, if the husband is not a good judge of this.
Right.
So what is good?
Yeah, so that is the big question. And those who are authorities on grihastha life in ISKCON can answer this question better than me, because I'm not an example either. Anyway, but one point is this, that in the Shastras it does say, if the husband has fallen, the wife can abandon the relationship, which I quoted in the last class, that the Amoga was considered by Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya to be fallen. And he quoted some Sanskrit verse that says, Sapatim ta patitam tyajet. It's a Sanskrit verse. Yes.
So that was Prabhupada's main point about in the 70s, the women's liberation movement.
Right.
That it was a plot by unscrupulous men.
Yes, yes. So all this is, it's Kali Yuga, so it's very, very difficult to understand what is the right thing to do. But therefore, we have our good association of devotees here who can give guidance. Those who have already gone through it, then they can help those who are yet to go through it. And therefore, we can try to avoid problems. Best thing is before you get married to try and work it out. So you know what you're getting into. It's not that you're going blindly.
But better is to be good brahmacharis like these people.
Yes, don't get married. Yeah, that's also, I mean, there are different paths. That's perhaps the path of least trouble. Of least trouble is just to remain renounced. You can get children by preaching. You can get disciples. You can get, it's much easier, I think. And they're probably a lot nicer to you than your own children. So, Aunt Parvati. Okay, so we'll go on. What verse are we on? Verse...
It's interesting because in this class, the modern day ISKCON, this is not the typical demographics.
No, not at all.
Most of ISKCON.
I know.
Many senior devotees here who are brahmacharis.
Yes.
And
single women.
So many ladies in white who are in the bottom class situation.
Right.
So
yeah, so.
Different demographics than the most.
It's quite different, yes. Yes, quite unique. Anyway, we can just speak from our own experience about these things. What's that?
Prabhupada said that household life is like having a big rock on your head.
Yes.
Too much burden.
Yes, okay. Well, sounds like you're speaking from experience also. Okay, let's go on. Verse 4. Yes, these verses are all very much practical application. It's just all... When they saw Sati leaving alone very rapidly, thousands of Lord Shiva's disciples, headed by Maniman and Mada, quickly followed her with his bull Nandi in front and accompanied by the Yakshas. So, purport, second half. There's one Sanskrit word here I really picked out. It's really nice. The Prabhupada also picked out. The word anuchara is also significant, for it indicates that Lord Shiva's disciples were always ready to sacrifice anything for Lord Shiva. All of them could understand the desire of Shiva, who did not want Sati to go alone. Anuchara means those who can immediately understand the purpose of their master. So Anuchara, this Prabhupada quotes this also in Bhagavad Gita, Anuchara and Anusmaran, I believe, in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You can imitate or you can follow the instructions. Who's an example of anuchara that we know of in our history, the Vaishnavas, who was a follower? You can give an example also. Like there's lilas that illustrate this example of anuchara.
Srila Prabhupada.
Of course, Srila Prabhupada. He's the first example. And there's another one. It's Rupa Goswami, that he understood the mind of Lord Chaitanya. So these followers, they understood the mind of Lord Shiva. Sri Rupa Goswami understood the mind of Lord Chaitanya.
Ishwar
Puri, yes, he's another example. And there was one, yes. There was one, I was watching Memories of Srila Prabhupada, and my god sister Kaushalya was speaking. And Prabhupada was explaining how there's three kinds of disciples, or three kinds of intelligence. So there's first class intelligence. Who can tell me what is a first class intelligence? Yeah. Yes. Yes. So actually, Kaushalya did this for Srila Prabhupada. 1971, the devotees were in New Delhi, and the war was going on between Pakistan and India. So at that time, in the evening, sometimes there would be air raid sirens, and perhaps bombing was going to come. So everyone had to turn off their lights as soon as they hear the siren. So it was very difficult, and they had to do everything by candlelight with Prabhupada. So Kaushalya bought some shades, and she painted them black on the outside. So then when it's time to turn out the light, she pulled down all the shades, and they kept the lights on. So Prabhupada said, this is first-class intelligence. That she anticipated a need of the guru, and then she did it. So second-class intelligence, yeah, you're told what to do, and you do it. You do it. Third-class intelligence. What's that? You do what you're told, even when you're told. The way Kaushalya told it was, you get the order of your guru, you go out the door, and then a while later you come back and say, what did you say? So that's third class intelligence. So here we have an example of first class, the followers of Lord Shiva, Anuchara, a very significant word for us because we're supposed to be followers of Srila Prabhupada. Yes. Pardon me? Yes, they're in the mode of ignorance, but there's mixed. Everybody's mixed in this world. There's nothing pure. Pure ignorance, pure. Maybe there may be, but it's very difficult. Even the modes are always competing. So there's some goodness in them. Yeah, so in that sense, they had some goodness. At least they were following. And that's how Buddha preached that. You know, at least they have some goodness. Right, so they had a tinge of goodness there because, you know, they associate with Lord Shiva and he's pure devotee. So it's bound to rub off. And that's he's trying to lift them up also. Yes?
I was wondering about this, the meaning of these two names, Manimad and Mada.
Oh, Mada means intoxication. Mada, yes? Manimad. Means what? Jewels.
Interesting.
Interesting. He's seeing something here. He's getting a realization from the Sanskrit words. So that's an interesting realization. It could be that she's followed by pride and intoxication. Yes. No, I believe Nandishwar is also the bull. Nandishwar. I think it's the same person, same bull. Well, he didn't feel like he did a great blunder. He felt like, you know, my guru is offended. I'm defending my guru. He didn't feel like that. I'm right. Yes.
Are the Yakshas also in Indraloka?
No, the Yakshas are with Kuvera.
Kuvera.
It's nearby where Lord Shiva is. Said we heard in some purport here. It's close by. No. Anyway, let's go on. Verse 5. Disciples of Lord Shiva arranged for Sati to be seated on the back of a bull and gave her the bird, which was her pet. They bore a lotus flower, a mirror, and all such paraphernalia for her enjoyment and covered her with a great canopy, followed by a singing party with drums, conch shells, and bugles. The entire procession was as pompous as a royal parade. Verse 6. She then reached her father's house where the sacrifice was being performed and entered the arena where everyone was chanting the Vedic hymns. The great sages, Brahmins, and demigods were all assembled there, and there were many sacrificial animals as well as pots made of clay, stone, gold, grass, and skin, which are all requisite for the sacrifice. So Prabhupada in the purport gives us a little bit, he fills us in on what's going on here at the sacrifice. Prabhupada says, when learned sages and Brahmins assemble to chant Vedic mantras, some of them also engage in arguing about the conclusion of the scriptures. So some of the sages and Brahmins were arguing, and some of them were chanting the Vedic mantras. So that could be like what happens in our sacrifices too, right? You were thinking the same thing? Some people are arguing and some people are chanting. So, well, what they're arguing about, the entire atmosphere was surcharged with transcendental sound vibration. This transcendental sound vibration has been simplified in the transcendental vibration. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we'll find the Maha Mantra all throughout these purports on the Daksha Yagya, because Prabhupada wants to remind us what is the real sacrifice. And he says that in the purport. In this age, no one is expected to be highly educated in the Vedic ways of understanding, because people are very slow, lazy, and unfortunate. Therefore, that's Manda Sumanda. Manda Sumanda Matayo. Yeah. Manda Bhagya Hupatarutaha. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya has recommended the sound vibration, Hare Krishna, and in Srimad Bhagavatam it is also recommended, Yagyai Sankirtana Prayaya Yajanti Hi Sumeda Shaha. So again and again, Prabhupada will emphasize Harinam Yagya here. 7. When Sati with her followers reached the arena, because all the people assembled were afraid of Daksha, none of them received her well. No one welcomed her but her mother and sisters, who with tears in their eyes and with glad faces welcomed her and talked with her very pleasingly. So now in the purport, we heard about women's weakness. Now we'll hear about how this weakness can be a strength. That Prabhupada says that because they, due to natural affection, they immediately embraced her. This shows women as a class are very soft-hearted. Their natural affection and love cannot be checked by artificial means. Although the men present were very learned Brahmins and demigods, they were afraid of their superior Daksha. And because they knew that welcoming Sati would displease him, although in their minds they wanted to receive her, they could not do so. Women are naturally soft-hearted, but men are sometimes very hard-hearted. So in Krishna Lila, the wives of the Brahmins, they were immediately ready to go to Krishna, whereas their husbands were in the same example, addicted to the fruit of sacrifices. So verse 8. Yeah, dependent on Daksha. No, they were like, see, there's a class of Brahmins that you hire to perform sacrifice. Actually, in 7th canto, all the classes of Brahmins are there. And there's higher class and lower class Brahmins. So some of them are like hired for the sacrifice kind of thing. Yeah. Though these weren't hired, but it's that idea. It's like they're performing. That's right. That's right.
Verse
7. No, it's in the purport. Oh, they were afraid. It doesn't say dependent. You have dependent?
Because they knew they would displease
him. Yeah. It's not that they were dependent, but they were afraid. Yeah. Yeah. It may have, like Shukracharya was definitely one of those kind of Brahmins in the Lila with Bali Maharaj. That he was dependent on Bali for his maintenance. Yeah. What is the right thing to do? Yeah. So this is always here. What's the right thing to do? What's the right thing to do? What's the right thing to do? For Sati, everyone's being faced with that choice in this Lila. What's the right thing to do? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he's big. Yes. In defense of Daksha, yes. Sakam Bhakta. Yes. He's Prajapati. Okay, anyway, Madhavendra Puri is bringing up the point that it's not like Daksha's a gross materialist. He's a Sakam devotee. He's a devotee. And he's the leader of the assembly right there. So they have reason to follow his authority. He's the authority, even though they're sages. Self-assertive activities going on here.
Yeah,
Right. Okay, he's trying. Okay, we have a psychological analysis by Sankirtan Das here. He's trying to keep up his self-esteem. So let's go on and see what happens. Verse 8. How Sati feels. Although she was received by her sisters and mother, she did not reply to their words of reception. And although she was offered a seat in presence, she did not accept anything. For her father neither talked with her nor welcomed her by asking about her welfare. So Prabhupada said that she was the youngest. She knew she was the pet child of Daksha. But now because of her association with Lord Shiva, Daksha forgot all his affection for his daughter, and this very much aggrieved her. Prabhupada gives us a philosophical truth here. Material bodily conception is so polluted that even upon slight provocation, all our relationships of love and affection are nullified. Bodily relationships are so transient, even though one is affectionate towards someone in a bodily relationship, a slight provocation terminates this intimacy. So love turns into hate very easily in bodily relationships. What is an example in the Leela of Krishna how this happened in some family? Some family. 1 minute they're all loving each other. Yes, the Yadus. And the next minute they're killing each other. Now, this is kind of an example, external example. Of course, internally there are many reasons why. But there is a verse in the first canto, 15th chapter, that this is all due to the supreme will of the Lord. Sometimes people kill one another, and other times they protect one another. So this is a verse from Bhagavatam. 1:15:24. And then the next two verses. As in the ocean, the bigger and stronger aquatics swallow up the smaller and weaker ones, so the Lord, to lighten the burden of the earth, has engaged the stronger yadu to kill the weaker, and the bigger yadu to kill the smaller. That's 1:15:25:26. 1:15:25:26. Verse 9. Present in the arena of sacrifice, Sati saw that there were no oblations for her husband, Lord Shiva. Next she realized that not only had her father failed to invite Lord Shiva, but when he saw Lord Shiva's exalted wife, herself, Daksha did not receive her either. Thus, she became greatly angry. So much so, she looked at her father as if she were going to burn him with her eyes. So did we hear something like that before? Sati's ready to burn somebody with her eyes. Lord Shiva. So she's going one extreme. First, she's telling, oh, you're not letting me have my way. I want to go see my family and you're not letting me go. Now she's seeing her family. Now she wants to burn them with her eyes. She wants to burn Daksha because of Lord Shiva. Now she's saying, oh, my husband, Lord Shiva, you're neglecting him. Now her attachment for Lord Shiva is coming up and she's ready to blast Daksha. So just right, very soon, one right after the other, she's ready to blast one and then the other. And so affection turns to something else. So verse 10, the followers of Lord Shiva, the ghosts, were ready to injure or kill Daksha, but Sati stopped them by her order. She was very angry and sorrowful, and in that mood, she began to condemn the process of sacrificial fruit of activities and persons who are very proud of such unnecessary and troublesome sacrifices. She especially condemned her father, speaking against him in the presence of all. So in the purport, about 7 lines down, Prabhupada says, one may prosecute the Vedic injunctions of offering sacrifices and other fruitive activities, but if by such activities one does not develop attraction for Vishnu, they are useless labors. So what is the verse from first canto that Prabhupada is paraphrasing here? Dharma svanastita punsam vishvakshena katasuya notpadaya yadiratim shamaeva ikevalam 1:28. 1:28. So Prabhupada often paraphrases verses in the purport, and here's an example of one of them. Prabhupada continues, one who has developed love for Vishnu must develop love and respect for Vishnu's devotees. Lord Shiva is considered the foremost personality amongst the Vaishnavas, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. So we have heard in the second chapter many wonderful qualities of Lord Shiva. So who can give me a reason why we say Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu? Why is he the greatest Vaishnava? Why not Narada Muni or somebody else? Why Lord Shiva? What is his great, great quality? Yes? Yes. Narada Muni preaches to elevated, but Lord Shiva, he goes to the most fallen, the ghosts, the drunkards. Yes.
He never sees the faults of others.
Good.
He takes only good qualities of everybody.
Good, very good. He never sees the faults of others, and he only takes the good qualities of everyone. Another. Yes.
Self-controlled.
Self-controlled. Dhira. He's Dhira. Okay?
And you don't
want to
mess with him.
You don't want to mess with him. So therefore, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. You are the greatest Vaishnava. Yes, the demigods do that often. They will do that after the sleep. Oh, you are the best. You are the creator. You are the destroyer. You are every... Yes. Charachara Guru. Yes. Moving and non-moving entities. Lord Shiva is Guru. Animate and inanimate. Yes.
He's always meditating on
Sankarshan. Yes, we heard that also in the last chapter. Yes, he's non-different from Vishnu. His yogurt is non-different from milk. Okay. So let's see. Prabhupada in the purport said, when Sati saw her father was performing great sacrifices but had no respect for the greatest devotee, Lord Shiva, she was very angry. This is fitting. When Vishnu or a Vaishnava is insulted, one should be angry. Lord Chaitanya, who always preached nonviolence, meekness, and humility, also became angry when Nityananda was offended by Jagai and Madhai, and he wanted to kill them. When Vishnu or a Vaishnava is blasphemed or dishonored, one should be very angry. So anyway, Prabhupada goes on to explain that. Trinadapi Sunichana, for ourselves, but for others. If others are blasphemed, then we should not tolerate. So here in this purport we heard about the uselessness of fruit of activities without devotion. Is anybody... Yeah?
I was going to say that point is... has come up very recently, isn't it?
Which point?
About getting angry.
Getting angry at who?
Well, there was one person who has posted over the last couple of years some statements derogatory to the Lord and Prabhupada.
Gotcha. Some person has...
So,
done that.
So
devotee.
Devotee. Well,
sort of.
So I guess people wouldn't like you to call them that.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a spiritual thing.
Okay, initiated.
So then the question is how to deal with him.
How to deal with him.
Some people say that, you know...
Cut out his tongue.
You know, on all the internets, just, you know, really act as if it's like you with all anger.
Be angry with him.
People say that, well, no, it's better...
Neglect. Yeah, neglect.
So the more you get angry, the more they become popular, everyone's going to want to read what they say.
That's true. If you're angry, then it escalates.
There's different schools of thought on this. It's been interesting to watch both of them go back and forth and then basically remain disagreement.
Okay, so the question is, should we neglect or should we be angry?
You can be angry and neglect, or you can be angry and...
Okay, should we be,
should
you be angry and do something about it, or you should be angry and neglect him? That is the question. Who votes for angry and do something about it? Nobody. Who votes for angry and neglect? Yeah, that's true. To neglect is a form of action. Yes. Yeah, if he's neglected, then that's also more like a Madhyam behavior would be to neglect. A Kanishna behavior would be to more like this, Leela here. Yeah, don't tell him my name also, you know. Yeah. Yes?
Milk touched by a
serpent. So what's the conclusion? That's true.
This is more difficult. comes.
Well, they weren't saying to get in a fight with them. They were saying to form all these on the world, this person, and name this person by name and say, this person is faster than one. They said, you know, it had nothing to do with it. And then other people said, just, most people don't even know about what this
That's true.
Said.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just bringing it up.
Yeah. No, it's good. I would agree with you that if to make a huge... Yeah, yeah. I don't know what side you're on.
No, but you said you agree with me, but I don't know.
No, I agree with... Oh, I see, I see.
About something in the Mahabharata concerning anger?
I'm sure. There's a lot of concerning anger.
But one of the conquerors became angry, probably ignored and didn't react at all.
No, that's not a... That's something else. That's something else. In the battle. That was a weapon. It's from the Mahabharata, but it's not applicable to this. Something. It's a weapon.
This proves that anger grows through anger.
Anger,
angry,
yes.
Angry.
Anger increases by anger. So you want to...
You see that in this passage.
Yes, yes, you see that. Anger causes anger.
It's interesting. It's a whole new, you know, especially with the internet, it's
yes.
a new application to Vedic traditions that the sages didn't have to do.
That's true. Of course, I would say also that it's the sages had more subtle things also that we didn't have. Of course, we do have to deal with it too. Anyway, all these things are going on. Okay, go ahead.
The discussion is also that why do these people envy us so
much? Well, yeah, that's another discussion. We're just our concern. Yeah. So best thing is to not even read what they said in the first place. So then we don't have to hear it. Because I'm not I don't go on internet. I just have my little mail and that's it. But anyway, yeah. But those who have to deal with it, then what should they do? That's the question. That is the question.
To
yeah. So we just have to see what level. If you're a Kanishtha, then. You're going to have trouble. If you're trying to act on the Madhyam platform, then it should be easier to
I
do.
It's two Madhyam opinions.
Two Madhyam opinions, uh-huh. Okay. So now from verses 11 to 23, Sati is going to speak her mind in anger. And let's see what she says. So the verse 11. Devyavacha. Nayasya loke styatishaya napiyas tatapya deha pitam piyatmana tasmin samastatmani mukta vairake prite pavantam katama patipayet. The Blessed Goddess said, Lord Shiva is the most beloved of all living entities. He has no rival. No one is very dear to him and no one is his enemy. No one but you could be envious of such a universal being who is free from all enmity. So she's saying he has no enemy. How is it possible for you to be envious of him? Like Yudhisthira, like the category of Yudhisthira. So you can follow the Sanskrit, atishayana, having no rival, priyastatapriyo, no one is dear, no one is enemy, priyatmana. He's the most beloved atma of all living entities. This is Lord Shiva. So these are his qualities. Verse 12. Twice born Daksha, a man like you can simply find fault in the qualities of others. Lord Shiva, however, not only finds no faults with others' qualities, but if someone has a little good quality, he magnifies it greatly. Unfortunately, you have found fault with such a great soul. So this is the quality. If he finds no fault and he magnifies the good qualities. So Prabhupada, in the purport, five lines down, Sati, Daksha's daughter, put before him sound arguments. There are some highly qualified persons who accept only the good qualities of others. Just as a bee is always interested in the honey in the flower and does not consider the thorns and colors, highly qualified persons who are uncommon accept only the good qualities of others, not considering their bad qualities. Whereas the common man can judge what are good qualities and what are bad qualities. Among the uncommonly good souls, there are still gradations, and the best good soul is one who accepts an insignificant asset of a person and magnifies that good quality. Lord Shiva is also called Ashutosh, which refers to one who is satisfied very easily and who offers to any person the highest level of benediction. So then at the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada paraphrases what Sati is saying. You are just the opposite. Although Lord Shiva has so many good qualities and no bad qualities at all, you have accepted him as bad and found fault with him. Because of your accepting his good qualities to be bad, instead of your becoming the most exalted soul, you have become the most fallen. A man becomes the greatest soul by accepting the goodness of others' qualities, but by unnecessarily considering others' good qualities to be bad, you have become the lowest of the fallen souls. Bhurijan makes a comment that everyone that we see has a mixture of good and bad. So if you're a good person, you'll see the good, you'll project your mind, and you'll pick up the good qualities. And if you're a bad person, you'll project your mind, and you'll pick up the bad qualities. Person. That's Bhurijan's comment. So Daksha was full of faults, so he was seeing the faults. And because Shiva was good, he magnifies the good. So remember the example I brought up in class a little earlier on of someone who saw the good. Who is that person who saw the good in someone and magnified? Although that person, the person he was looking at, yes. Srila Prabhupada, yes. Who else? We can always say Srila Prabhupada for any of these. It's true. He has all these qualities, actually. Lord Krishna with Putana. He picked up who? Aho Bhakiyam Stana Kalaputam. Yes. Yes, we can always say Krishna. We can always say Prabhupada. Yes. All these devotees fit this description. Yeah. Okay, we'll get the blessings of Lord Shiva today because it's Monday and we're glorifying Lord Shiva. Parvati, Mother Jesus.
Actually Monday
and Lord I don't know.
It's his day.
Monday is Lord Shiva's day.
Tuesday is Monday.
Okay. Let's go back to the class. So Srila Prabhupada gives the example of flies and bees. There's flies and there's bees, and the flies go for the stool and the bees go for the honey. And then in a lecture in New Vrindavan, he said that we should make our society a honeycomb society.
Honeycomb.
Those who are looking for honey will find it in ISKCON, Prabhupada said. So don't make it a stool society, that the flies are coming, landing on the stool. Make it a honey society. It's at least give them a chance, those who are seeking after honey. Don't cheat people, Prabhupada said. This is a lecture on Bhagavatam 1.5, 9-11, New Vrindavan, 69. So make this a honeycomb society, so don't cheat people. Oh, now here's my famous quote that I've been waiting to tell you, that I promised you in so many classes. Tamal Krishna Maharaj asks Prabhupada this question. What is the way to draw the line between three things? Number one, calling a spade. Number two, blasphemy. And number three, fault-finding. So blasphemy, fault-finding, and calling a spade. Everybody knows what it means, calling a spade means speaking what is the truth, exactly, without covering it, just speaking what is exactly the truth. That's in English, there's a saying, calling a spade. Sometimes when you play card games, you cheat, and you say, no, it's not a spade, something else. No, it's calling a spade. So telling the truth. So Prabhupada said, oh, a spade, just like he said to Tamal Krishna, I say, what are you? You are a small fig only. That is reality. Next. He says, who are you? You're just nothing. So that's calling a spade, Prabhupada said to Tamal. He's always doing this with Tamal. So then next, he said, next question, fault-finding. So fault-finding. He said, this is the example of the bees and the flies. He says there are two classes of living beings. There's the flies and the bees. And they've got two businesses. The flies are looking for the sower, and the bees are looking for the honey. Two creatures, two classes. So there are many rascals who are simply fault-finding. And then in Bhagavad Gita purport, there's a Sanskrit word, apaishanam. This is 16 chapter, verses 1 to 3. Means one should not find fault with others or correct them unnecessarily. Of course, to call a thief is not fault finding, but to call an honest person a thief is very much offensive for one who is making advancement in spiritual life. So then the third one is blasphemy. So what do you think blasphemy means? I told you the other two. Blasphemy. We've got fault finding. You look for the faults in the person. And blasphemy, yeah.
Telling other people about the faults.
Telling other people about the faults. Something different. It's something different. Kutinati. Criticizing? Criticizing what? Krishna and devotees. Yeah. Kutinati is to tell someone what you've heard, yes? Minimizing the Lord's position. Well, here's what Prabhupada says. Blasphemy means you have good qualities, but still I'm defaming you. So I'm defaming you. He says you have good qualities, only good qualities, but I'm defaming you still. This is, I don't know, actually I forgot to write this thing, TKG, I forgot to write I have the reference at home on my computer, but I forgot to actually write it here. I don't know if this is New Vrindavan or not. I'll have to look it up. So then Tamal tries to clarify. So the saintly person tends to overlook the bad qualities and see the good ones. Prabhupada said yes. So it's like my understanding is finding, like blasphemy means you have all good qualities and then you just defame him anyway. There's nothing to say about, nothing bad to say, but you just somehow say something. And fault finding is maybe there is some little fault and you find it. So fault finding, you find the fault, isn't it? You find it somehow. Where is the fault? Whereas blasphemy, there is no fault, actually. There's nothing that you can find. Like Ramachandra Puri. There was no fault in Lord Chaitanya. He said, there's ants. He saw some ants and said, oh, this proves that you're a greedy sannyasi. You've been eating sugar. There's no fault. But so he blasphemed Lord Chaitanya. So that's interesting.
Spade
is spade. Prabhupada just
tell
the facts. He said, this is reality. What he was telling us that actually we're all insignificant. We have nothing to be proud of. If we take it generally, that we're all thinking that we have something, but actually we're very insignificant. So even Lord Krishna was criticized when he was here, when he was in Dwarka. Somebody was criticizing Lord Krishna for no reason. It's in Krishna book. You know? Samataka and Jewel. So Prabhupada says, this amazing, and Prabhupada said, the Lord brought the jewel to Dwarka to establish his integrity there. People didn't believe him, some people. And Prabhupada says, this amazing series of incidents demonstrates that even when Lord Krishna descends to this world, there is a tendency for his peers to criticize him. Yes. The whole material world is infected by fault-finding propensity. And in this chapter, this 10:57-41, that's there. So Śrīla Bhakti-siddhānta actually analyzes these weeds in Madhya 12:135, actually in the purport. Śrīla Bhakti-siddhānta Saraswati is quoted by Śrīla Prabhupāda. He says, even though one may become free from desire for fruit of activity, sometimes the subtle desire for fruit of activity again comes into being within the heart. So this is in this canto, we're dealing with subtle desires. Because the gross, as you advance in spiritual life, the four regulative principles, even of course that may be a problem, but for some devotees it's not a problem. They can follow, but then they do have a problem with subtle material desires. So this is all about subtle desires. So Śrīla Bhakti-siddhānta says, one often thinks, here's one of them, one subtle desire for a devotee. One often thinks of conducting business to improve devotional activity. So here's, what's wrong with that? I'm going to do it for Krishna. Give some donations. But This is the problem. The contamination is so strong that it may later develop into misunderstanding, described as kutinati, fault-finding, and pratishtasha, desire for name and fame and high position, jivahingsa, envy of other living entities, nishithachar, accepting things forbidden, kama, desire for material gain, puja, hankering. So if this is one example given by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta, that all these weeds can come just from one subtle desire and then trying to follow it, then this is the result. This is for devotees. So again, Prabhupada, in 1973, there was a problem. There was a split in ISKCON that some devotees left and they started their own group. And Prabhupada was responding to that to Madhavisa Swami, who was in the zone of these devotees. He said, try to convince them to return to our society and work cooperatively. That they have gone away is not a good thing. It is a deviation from our line of parampara. Rather, avoid fault-finding and anarchy. They should keep our standards and work maturely and not cause factions and splitting. I'm not at all pleased with what they have done, but if they return, let us forget what has happened and go forward. So he's saying, okay, what they did is wrong, but if they come back, forget everything. As sannyasis, they may preach and you may manage. That will be very nice. We've got so much vital spiritual knowledge to distribute to the public and they are in desperate need of it. The whole world is going to hell and everyone is suffering. In light of this, how can we argue amongst one another and neglect our responsibility for reclaiming these fallen souls for going back to home, back to Godhead? This is a letter to Madhavisa in LA, 1973. So what is an example of how Prabhupada magnified the good qualities in someone? If you can't, yeah.
I think Hayagriva.
Yeah, he was one example. Yeah.
He was very independent.
Independent
attached and to his ways before.
Yeah.
And
he would do so. He would break the rules and he would come back many times.
Prabhupada would.
Yeah, and then, And then one time I was hearing on the memory, I think it was Giriraj Swami in Calcutta, that again he did it. He went away. He was in Calcutta. He went away and was doing nonsense in Calcutta. And so then Prabhupada told Giriraj Maharaj, tell him if he does this, I won't take him back again. I'll reject him. So then Giriraj asked Giriraj, he was Das at that point. He said, Prabhupada, will you really reject him? He said, no. He said, but I just want to try and make him come back. So anyway, that was Srila Prabhupada. And again, I know he told Hayagriva one time, two times, three times, you're forgiven. But after that, forget it. You fall down. So another example I was thinking of was Prabhupada. He was in some lectures, not only one or two lectures, he was saying that if a drunkard drinks wine and chants Hare Krishna, he thinks that the taste of this wine is Krishna. He said one day he will become a nice devotee just by drinking wine. So this was Prabhupada's, he was seeing the good qualities. Verse 13.
Actually, to answer that question, probably many times on a daily basis.
What's that? Which answer?
To give examples of Prabhupada doing this. You said, what are the examples of Prabhupada?
Oh, Achcha.
I think if we examine carefully, it's very likely that the answer would be many, many times every single day.
Many, many times every single day, right.
Even from a mundane management point of view, this is the actual quality of a leader. They go around encouraging people.
They go around encouraging people.
Fanning the spark. Of course, Prabhupada, even when Prabhupada was chastising us, really, because of the loving relationship was there, he was fanning the spark.
Right.
So, in one sense, that's all he did.
He
went around.
That's all he could do.
But that's what a sadhana does. That's what a leader does.
He goes around fanning the sparks. Okay, so this is all according to modern leadership. Theory or modern leadership theory?
They catch people doing things right.
Oh, you've done that so nicely. Okay. Verse, are we ready? For verse 30, it is not wonderful for persons who have accepted the transient material body as a self to engage always in deriding great souls. Such envy on the part of materialistic persons is very good, because that is the way they fall down. They are diminished by the dust of the feet of great personalities. So is she having some roadblocks to communication here with her father, trying to preach to him? So many things. So Burija made an interesting comment. It is not wonderful means it's typical for persons who have accepted the body as a self. It's typical. They have so much envy, they criticize the Mahatmas. So at the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada says, everything depends on the strength of the recipient. For example, due to the scorching sunshine, many vegetables and flowers dry up and many grow luxuriantly. Thus, it is a recipient that causes growth and dwindling. Similarly, Mahiya Sampadara Jobhishekam, the dust of lotus feet of great personalities offers all good to the recipient, but the same dust can also do harm. Those who are offenders at the lotus feet of a great personality dry up. Their godly qualities diminish. A great soul may forgive offenses, but Krishna does not excuse offenses to the dust of that great soul's feet. Just as one can tolerate scorching sunshine on one's head, cannot tolerate scorching sunshine on one's feet. So on the beach, Virgin gives the example, you're walking on the beach, the hot sun is beating down. On your head, it's not so bad, but on the feet, you walk, if you've been to Jagannath Puri in the summer, in the middle of the summer, your feet, you will get blistered, they'll get burnt if you walk on the hot sand. So the feet, why is this example being given about the feet and the head? Why is it like that? That the feet, of Krishna. What's that? Yes, but why the feet offending the devotees? Okay, that's it. The devotees are at the Lord's feet. So that's, they're the dust of the feet. So, kuna atma vadishu, kuna pa atma, who accept the dead body as a self. Sarvada maha vininda, always derive great souls. Nirasta tejasu, their tejas will be finished. Nirasta, they will fall down. So, let's see, I have something here. Oh, a nice insert. There's a verse, 9468, a very famous verse. I'll sing it for you. Sarva hridayam mayam sadunam hridayam kaham madanyate na janante naham tevyo manakapi. Pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anything else but them. So Prabhupada explained that because the devotee is always in the heart of the Lord, if you give pain to a devotee, the Lord feels pain in the heart. It's painful to the Lord's heart because that's where the devotee is. Here, this example is the feet. But in the ninth canto, the example is the heart. A devotee is in the Lord's heart, and you're giving pain to the heart of the devotee if you offend the Vaishnava. So these are just things for us to remember. So that any devotee, you have, because one of the themes of this canto that I put up before you were here, who is a Vaishnava? We do not know. We cannot judge by externals. Who would have thought that a 5-year-old boy, Dhruva Maharaj, is going to be a pure devotee? And he was offended when he was 5 years old by Suruchi. Suruchi was her name. And she was killed. She died because of that. She died. And how did she know he's a pure devotee? So how do we know who is a pure devotee? We offend somebody. Yeah.
He was angry. The reason he was angry was not because of being angry at the devotee.
No, not. I'm doing it from the other side. She offended him. That's true. I'm not justifying his anger. Yeah. No, I didn't. I said, how you know he would be a pure devotee? He would be. Yeah.
It's like this matter of being the proper recipient was explained by another material, if you remember, on 8:29.
Yes, 29.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. 1:8:29.
How to become a full recipient
Yes. Yeah, the Lord is not partial, but it's according to our ability to accept His mercy. Yes. So that's right. Okay. I just want to give one example here of Vaishnava Parad. This is the Hathi Mata magazine. Mad elephant. You can see a picture of the mad elephant who comes in our heart if we make some offense to a Vaishnava and destroys our devotional creeper. So the story is of one Mataji named Krishna Priya Thakurani. She was the daughter of Ganga Narayan. And I won't tell the whole story, but I'll just say that she was such an elevated devotee that she inherited the Shila of Raghunath Das Goswami, the Govardhan Shila. And she was doing worship to that Govardhan Shila every day. She inherited it from Mukunda Das. So one day she was attending a Bhagavatam class of Rupa Kaviraj. And during the class she was chanting Hare Krishna. And he got really angry. He said, how can you do two things at once? How can you chant and listen to me at the same time? So then she said, well, it's just the nature of my tongue to constantly vibrate the holy name. I can't do anything about it. It's just how it is. It's my tongue just chants. So he got really angry. And then as soon as he got angry, then that was the beginning of the end of his devotional service. And he was a highly elevated devotee, actually. So then what happened, he became proud. He started preaching a deviant philosophy. He rejected his guru. And finally he got leprosy. And then he died from the leprosy. He became a ghost. And he haunted any devotee who commits offense to another devotee. He would haunt that person. So the person would know if he was haunted by this ghost that he's committing Vaishnava Parad. So this is one example of yeah. This philosophy of Rupa Kaviraj is still prevailing in Assam that he started. He has twisted the philosophy. And it's all started by committing an offense to a Vaishnava. And I'll start. So many examples are there. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramachandra Khan sent the prostitute. He was the one who sent the prostitute to Haridas. And then Nityananda knew he came to visit Ramachandra Khan. And he sat on the Durga Mandap, and Ramachandra Khan said, this place is not fit for you. You should go to the house of a cowherd. It's much bigger. He's got a barn where you can stay. So Nityananda got really furious, and he said, yes, you're right. This place is not fit for me. And he stormed out. And then just a few days or sometime later, the Muslim person in charge came because Ramachandra Khan was not paying his taxes. So he came and he sat on that same place where Nityananda was, and he cooked the flesh of a cow for 3 days. And he ate. And he plundered the house, he arrested the family, and the whole village became deserted. So this is just by committing Vaishnava Parad again to Haridas Thakur. So many examples. Another one, Gopal Chakravarti Brahman, who offended Haridas Thakur, saying that Haridas was saying simply by chanting the holy name, just a glimpse of the holy name, you get mukti. And this Brahmin said, this is not possible. And if I'm not liberated by, if one is not liberated by Nama Bas, then I will cut off your nose, said to Haridas. Haridas said, yes, if you're not liberated, I will cut off my own nose. But then everyone fell at the feet of Haridas, and that person also got leprosy. This is the reaction to Vaishnava Parad, is that you get leprosy and you suffer like anything. His nose came off, right? Big nose. 13, okay, let's look closely here. Mahayasamparajo Abhishekam, right. Roll. Okay. So Madhavendra Puri is pointing out in the purport we get the remedy for Vaishnava Parad. Mahiyasam Pararajo Pishekam. Roll in the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee. Yes, okay, Madhavendra Puri says you should physically roll in the dust.
That's all right then?
Sure.
You
don't have to make a scene. You can go to some secluded place and roll in the dust. Anyway, so you can try it sometime and see how it feels. Yes. That's true. Right. Can you change this flip chart, please, Prabhu? Verse 14. Sati continued, "My dear father, you are committing the greatest offense by envying Lord Shiva, whose very name, consisting of two syllables, Shi and Va, purifies one of all sinful activities. His order is never neglected. Lord Shiva is always pure, and no one but you envies him." So Shi, Va, two syllables, purifies all sinful activities. And Alangya Shashanam, whose order is never neglected, and Pavita Kirtim, his fame is pure. So Prabhupada explains, why is Shiva auspicious? Who can tell me? Who read the purport? Even if it's not in the purport, you can tell me. Why is Lord Shiva auspicious? We've heard this, how Lord Shiva is very auspicious. He purifies everyone. So who is Lord Shiva auspicious for, especially? Yes? The very fallen people, yes. Here Prabhupada says, since Lord Shiva is the greatest soul among living entities within this material world, his name, Shiva, is very auspicious for persons who identify the body with the soul. If such persons take shelter of Lord Shiva, gradually they will understand they are not the material body, but are spirit soul. Shiva means Mangala, or auspicious. So the word Mangala, we should know it's a synonym for Shiva, all auspicious. 11 lines up from the end, Prabhupada says, as previously explained, Satvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shaptitam, Lord Shiva is always in meditation on the lotus feet of Vasudeva, Shri Krishna. Thus, the auspicious position of Lord Shiva is realized if one takes to the worship of Vishnu. So Prabhupada is saying, okay, he's auspicious, but we should worship Lord Vishnu. And then you'll see how he's auspicious. So, because Lord Shiva says in the Shiva Purana, the topmost worship is worship of Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva is worshipped because he's the greatest devotee of Lord Vishnu. So here Prabhupada is trying to remove the misconception of those who worship Lord Shiva to the exclusion of Lord Vishnu. And actually, if you want to really worship Shiva, then you have to, if you want to understand Lord Shiva, then you have to worship Vishnu. That's what he's saying here in this purport. There's another place where the word Shiva appears, right in the beginning of Bhagavatam. Tapatrayo Shivadam, Tapatrayo Mulanam. Second verse of Bhagavatam. Dharma Vedyam Vastava Matravastu Shivadam. All auspiciousness. So Bhagavatam gives all auspiciousness, as exemplified by the word Shivadam. So verse 15. I'll read the Sanskrit. Yat parapatmam mahatam manolipir nisevitam brahmarasas savartibi lakasyat varshati chashishatinas tasmai bhavantruhyati visvabandave. You are envious of Lord Shiva, who is the friend of all living entities within the three worlds. For the common man, he fulfills all desires. And because of their engagement in thinking of his lotus feet, he also blesses higher personalities who are seeking after Brahmananda, transcendental bliss. So Vishvabandhave, friend of all living entities, Lokasya Yadvarshati Chashisho, fulfills everyone's desires and blesses the impersonalists. At the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, the four principles of material life, religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation exist. And Lord Shiva is the friend of both the ordinary man and the man who is elevated in spiritual knowledge. Thus, it was not good for Daksha to create enmity towards him. Even Vaishnavas, who are above both the ordinary and the elevated man. So there's three categories here. Common man, elevated man, and Vaishnavas. And he's dear to all three. Thus, he is the friend. They also, even the Vaishnavas also worship Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnava. Thus, he is the friend of everyone, common men, elevated men, and devotees of the Lord. So no one should disrespect or create enmity towards Lord Shiva. So imagine these three types of people all agree, the very extreme different classes of people, the Mayavadis, and then the hippies, the drunkards, and then we've got the devotees. So all three worship Lord, love Lord Shiva. We worship him as the best of Vaishnavas. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. So here in Vrindavan, we see how all the Vaishnavas worship Lord Shiva as Gopeshwar, Gopeshwar Mandir, as the gopis did. And this Shiva Linga is 5,000 years old, installed by Lord Krishna's grandson, Vajranab. So the story, I'll tell the story later, because it'll come up in a purport later on, I think in the 24th chapter. So verse 16, her last argument, I mean for today, she'll go on tomorrow. Do you think that greater, more respectable personalities than you, such as Lord Brahma, do not know this inauspicious person who goes under the name Lord Shiva? So she's really putting him down now. That even, you know, who are you compared to Lord Brahma? And Lord Brahma worships Lord Shiva. She's really putting him down. He associates with the demons in the crematorium. His locks of hair are scattered all over his body. He's garlanded with human skulls and smeared with ashes from the crematorium. But in spite of all these inauspicious qualities, great personalities like Brahma honor him by accepting the flowers offered to his lotus feet and placing them with great respect on their heads. So what we remember... Okay, well, let's read the purport first, and then we'll try and remember, because some of you missed the previous classes. Purport. It is useless to condemn a great personality like Lord Shiva, and this is being stated by his wife, Sati, to establish the supremacy of her husband. So now she's going to paraphrase. First, she said, you call Lord Shiva inauspicious because he associates with demons and crematoriums, covers his body with the ashes of the dead, and garlands himself with the skulls of human beings. You have shown so many defects, but you do not know that his position is always transcendental. Although he appears inauspicious, why do personalities like Brahma respect the dust of his lotus feet and place on their heads with great respect those very garlands which are condemned by you? Garlands of skulls? I wonder. Since Sati was a chaste woman and the wife of Lord Shiva, it was her duty to establish the elevated position of Lord Shiva, not only by sentiment but by facts. Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living entity. This is the conclusion of Vedic scripture. He is neither on the level of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor on the level of the ordinary living entities. He's in between. So now let's revive our memory of the second chapter, which some of you missed. Quite a few of you missed. So we, in that chapter, we were discussing why he behaves like this. Why does he smear the ashes? First, we learned two lessons. Well, one lesson we learned from this. What did the devotees, Prabhupada said? Devotees can learn something from Lord Shiva's behavior. So what did the devotees learn from this behavior of Lord Shiva?
He doesn't want to go down to the facilities of opposition because he assumes that everything belongs to Krishna anyway.
Yes.
So I'm not going to encroach upon anything.
Yes.
Everything.
So that was his mentality, the reason why he does this. That why should I accept nice things? They're all for Krishna. I won't accept any nice things, I'll give them all to Krishna. So that's why he dresses like this. And what was the lesson that we learned?
His tolerance.
Tolerance? Well, that's certainly a quality of Lord Shiva that we learned from this Leela. But there's another thing we learned from his behavior of dressing very strangely. That's a good point, actually, that his tolerance, yeah? Yes, Prashanta. Yeah, it keeps away the materialists. but we should, yes, there you got it, renunciation. But we should not imitate his behavior to keep away the materialists, Prabhupada said. We should not do that also. We should imitate his qualities of renunciation, or we should follow, not imitate. We should follow his qualities, but not imitate the other ones, like wearing the skulls and et cetera, et cetera. And who is the great devotee that Śrīla Prabhupāda compared Lord Shiva to in his behavior? Gaurikishordas Babaji. And he also behaved like that, to keep away the materialists. So this is what's happening here. I have another nice quote to support this. 8th canto, 7th chapter, verse 33. This is spoken by the demigods when they're going to Lord Shiva, begging him to drink the ocean of poison. And they say, "Exalted, self-satisfied persons who preach to the entire world, think of your lotus feet constantly within their hearts." So just the preachers, those who preach are always thinking of Lord Shiva. This is a verse here. "However, when persons who do not know your austerity see you moving with Uma, they misunderstand you to be lusty." So preachers, they love Lord Shiva, they meditate, they pray to him. But other materialistic persons, they say, "Oh, he's with Parvati," therefore they misunderstand, "Oh, he's lusty." Or when they see you wandering in the crematorium, they mistakenly think you are ferocious and envious. Certainly, they are shameless. They cannot understand your activities. So that's a verse, a quote of 8, what? Mudra. Yeah, that's a very nice quote in the prayer part I had here, but the time is Vaishnavar Kriya Mudra Vige Na Bhujai. You cannot understand the behavior of a Vaishnava. Now that's very certainly applicable to Lord Shiva. So the last thing I would like to read to you is a little Shiva Tattva. That is 8.7.33, if I'm correct in my quote. Yes,
8.7.33. And where was
the Sanskrit from? The what? Oh, the Sanskrit, that's from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's not the... Wait a minute. No, it's not given here. But somewhere else along the line... It's quoted by Śrīla Prabhupāda many, many places from Chaitanya Charitamrita. You cannot understand the behavior of a Vaishnava.
It applies to most of this country.
Yes, that's true. So I wanted to give you a little Shiva Tattva before we finish. And this is from Brahma Samhita. You heard it last year, but some of you weren't here. So I'll just read it again, or I'll summarize it actually. The verse is, Shiram yatarikara vishesha yogat sanjayate nahitata pitagastiketo yasham bhutam apitata samapaitikarya govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, yet the effect curd is neither the same as nor different from its cause, milk. So, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. So here in Bhaktisiddhanta's very elevated language, he says that just as milk turns into curd, so Godhead becomes a subservient when he attains a distinct personality by the addition of an element of adulteration. So when Vishnu becomes adulterated, he becomes Lord Shiva. So that adulteration is three things. Last year I read this. You probably can't remember it, so I'll just say it again. First, you have he's adulterated by the deluding energy, the external energy. So the quality of adulteration of the deluding energy is the stupefying quality. So that would be the mode of ignorance. He's adulterated by the mode of ignorance of the external energy. Then the marginal energy, he's got some part of that too, the jivas. And the quality of the marginal energy that he's adulterated by is the non-plenitude. It means that he doesn't have the quantity of Krishna. He's a part of like insignificance. He's got some of the insignificance. 84%. So he's not quite 94% like Vishnu. So then the third thing is not exactly adulteration, it's the internal potency he has also. He's got a slight degree of the ecstatic cum cognitive principle, means hladini and samvit shakti of the spiritual potency. So he is called Sadashiva in the form of Shambhu, from whom Rudradeva is manifested. So maybe you remember this, in creation, maintenance and destruction, Lord Shiva has a hand in all three. So in creation, what does Lord Shiva, what is his position in creation? What's that?
Glands?
He's in the glands. Or he is actually, he is a reflected glands. He's a reflection of the glands. Yes, okay, so that's one aspect. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gives another. It's another way of understanding what you say. Another way of looking at it. That's another thing. So what he says is he's the material cause of creation. So that is the glance, or the reflection of the glance. The actual glance is spiritual, but he's the reflection of the glance, and he causes creation. So then in maintenance, what does he do? How does he help the maintenance? Yeah. Yes, by killing the demons, he helps in maintenance. And destruction, he conducts the whole show. Yes, he does everything. So then also, one last point is that he is the form of time. He is the personality of the destructive principle in the form of time. That's Bhaktisiddhanta. He says, I'm not saying this, he says this is identified, the destructive principle in the form of time is identified with that of Shambhu by scriptural evidences. And Bhagavatam, and Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu means, in pursuance of the will of Govinda, he works in union with his consort Durga Devi by his own time energy. And here's his preaching. He teaches dharma, pious duties, as stepping stones to the attainment of spiritual service in the various tantra shastras, suitable for jivas in different grades of conditional existence. So he has his own shastras, tantra shastras, and this prepares people to become devotees, So that's one of his preaching. Also he fosters, this is an interesting idea, he preaches Mayavadism, and the speculative agama shastras in obedience to the will of Govinda. And by preaching Mayavadism, he maintains and fosters the religion of pure devotion. So understand that one. He fosters pure devotion and maintains it by preaching Mayavad philosophy. Okay, strange but true. 50 attributes of individual souls are manifest in a far vaster measure in Shambhu, and 5 additional attributes not attainable by jivas are also partly found in him. So he cannot be called a jiva. He is the lord of jivas, but partakes of the nature of a separated portion of Govinda. So, Brahma Samhita. So when Lord Chaitanya, that's 545, Brahma Samhita, 45th verse. When Lord Chaitanya took sannyas and went from Nadia to Puri, he was visiting all the temples of Lord Shiva and dancing and worshipping Lord Shiva. So this is Lord Shiva. And Prabhupada at the end of this purport explains that the real reason Sati came to her father's house was to try and mediate the argument between her father and her husband. She was attempting at mediation, but I don't know if she was following the principles of mediation at all. Quite.
Ultimately, she succeeded.
Yeah, ultimately. Yeah. She had to kill herself. I don't think that's one of the things you do, is it? One alternative is to kill yourself as a mediator.
And then come back.
And then
with the same husband.
With the same husband. Yeah, she'll come as Parvati in her next. Yeah.
I think she was not the right person.
She's not the right person to be the mediator. She was suffering the most, so she was not the right person to be the mediator, was she?
Yeah, it was called triangulation.
Triangulation, what do you call it?
And
Sati.
Yeah.
So therefore she wouldn't be selected as a mediator.
Was she neutral in the last papers to be
selected? Yeah, not at all. She's saying, you're useless, you're a rascal. Look what you're doing. She's being heavy. She's being so heavy to Daksha, not like Madhvendapuri was trying to defend, but Sati was so heavy. Yes. And she's convinced she's right. Of course she's right, but she can't be the mediator. We had this discussion, remember, in one class, that you may be right, but that doesn't justify your behavior.
Right.
Isn't it?
It may not help the
situation. Yeah. Yeah, okay, he's bringing up a good point. In the relationship, if you're right, you should not pursue that avenue or that, what is it? That way of, that approach. I'm right.
Not insisting that you're right.
You're trying to preserve the relationship, so you don't, yes. Yes, someone blasphemes. Three things you should do. Yes. Go away. Kill yourself, yeah. This is going to be, this is a verse by Sati coming up tomorrow. It's coming up tomorrow, this verse. Well, not exactly defeat by argument, but either go, what do you do? Go away or cut out the tongue or kill yourself. It's like, what's that? And give up your own life after you cut out his tongue. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I have a quote about that tomorrow. I have a quote from when the brainwashing was going on. Because the verse comes up tomorrow, actually, that you should do this. Sati will speak it. And then, so, yeah, Adi Purushpa.
On this?
On which?
4412.
4412, okay. Well, we don't. Okay, magnifying the good. 4412.
So, both Jivanasamy and Shidharasamy, they point out that actually four types of outlooks are described in this verse.
Four types of outlooks are described in this verse.
So, one is Bhavadvisham. Bhavadvisham is like you. It's like.
Bhavadvisham.
It's like Daksha.
Like you, Daksha. Who thinks like Daksha? Bhavadvisham. See, it's very small dosha.
Very small fault, you magnify it.
He magnifies it. Okay, so this is one outlook. You see a small fault, you magnify it.
He doesn't see good qualities.
Doesn't see good qualities.
Then there
are the sadhus. Sadhus, this is the second one.
So they see both good and bad.
They see good and bad.
Good and dosha.
With proper discrimination.
But they do not pay so much attention to the bad qualities.
So they don't pay so much attention to the bad qualities if there are good qualities. So that's the second. There?
Mahanta.
Okay, Mahatma, that last.
First Mahanta.
Mahanta.
There is Mahanta, Mahatara, and Mahatma.
Okay, Why don't you write it? Mahanta?
Mahatara.
Mahatara, okay. Mahatma. Okay, I got it. Mahata, Mahatara. So there are different degrees.
Great, greater, and greatest.
Yeah, great, greater, and greatest. Mahata, Mahatara, and Mahatma. Okay.
The great see good and bad.
The great see good and bad. Mahata see good and bad.
But they do not pay so much attention to bad.
They don't pay so much attention to bad.
Then the greater.
Mahatara, the greater.
They do not see the bad. They do not accept the bad at all.
They don't accept the bad at all.
They accept only the good.
They accept only the good.
Then
Mahatma.
Not only they do not accept the bad.
They don't accept the bad. They take the smallest good and magnify it and make it bigger. So these are the four types described in this verse. This is a commentary of who?
Shridhar
and Jiva Goswami say similar things. It's in Sanskrit. He's just on the spot translating. No. Okay, Brijbihari is asking Adi Purush to email his brain because. All right. Yeah. Okay, so on the spot translation here, we're having of the commentaries of Jiva Goswami and Sridhar Goswami, and a wonderful commentary. Verse 12, how four types of people are being described. Mahata, first there's Bhavadisho, Daksha, like you, then there's Mahata, Mahatara, and Mahatama. Yes.
It's interesting because the one kind of tying in with what you just read and the other what we were talking about before about blasphemy. Mm-hmm. There's only that one example as far as I know of Srila Prabhupada actually like saying someone's distinct and one of his disciples and basically.
Example? Nitai.
Nitai,
yeah. It was the only one.
But then later Sridhar Maharaj told me that Prabhupada told him, said, go find Nitai and bring it back. A year or two later.
Yeah.
We'll find out where Nitai is.
Bring him back.
So he was really one of those.
Mahatma.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada, even though he cursed Nitai, he asked him.
What?
No, he didn't come back.
No,
but
no,
Some people have seen, have cited him.
Oh, he just wrote something not so.
Not so. Okay, so he's in action, but.
He's a little.
In action.
If you ever read his website, he's like a nutty professor.
Nutty professor, okay, well. So be careful with the Vaishnav aparat. You become a nutty professor, maybe at the worst. Yes, at the. Okay. Sankirtan. All right, you decide. What are we are? 441. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, room. Oh, that's an interesting comment. They're living under the tree, but here in the first verse it said she's got a room. Well, let's see what the word for room is. Room. That's true. Okay. You'll have to research that and bring us the answer. Sankirtan Das. Treehouse. Okay, she says it's a treehouse. Yes, if you live in nature, yes, you're familiar with these things. Yes? Okay, Sadaput was talking about Lord Shiva's tree and 600 miles high, yeah, in fifth canto. 400 miles wide. Lord Shiva's 45 miles high by that scale. So even if you saw him, you wouldn't be able to focus. You maybe see his feet. That's best. Okay, yes. Last comment. Sankirtan Das. On right mango. Yes, becomes right mango. Yeah, Prabhupada did say that.
Vaishnav may be in a contaminated stage or at misconceptions, but because of the watering process, the chanting, after the sun and the rain, then the gradual purification takes place.
Right.
So at any stage, even if it's right or sour bitter stage, the Swiss at least considered Vaishnav as long
right.
as he chants.
Right.
As long as he actually asks for it.
If he's praying for pure devotion, he's a Vaishnava.
So when you bring up the question, who is a Vaishnava? I wonder how that relates to that.
Okay, who is a Vaishnava? How it relates to?
That consideration that some people...
That you may be an unripe mango. Is he a Vaishnava? That's the question.
They have all kinds of misconceptions, offensive conceptions. But because they are engaging in this
yes.
process, it's sincerely, it's actually...
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Tamal, when he was a new devotee, he asked Prabhupada a question. How many pure devotees are there on the planet, Srila Prabhupada? So Prabhupada's answer was, how many devotees are there in ISKCON? Quite an interesting answer. Of course, there may be some outside of ISKCON, but anyway, that was Prabhupada's answer. How many pure devotees are there? Yes?
Well, Bhakti Vatakura talks about that, the Harinam Chitamani.
Harinam Chitamani.
He talks about the 29 qualities of a devotee, you mentioned in the Canto, and... Surup Lakshana is only one, and the first is...
Surup Lakshana, yes.
And the one is, what does it mean? What's the name of you in the
sense?
One... No, the one Surup Lakshana.
The Surup Lakshana is, out of the 26 qualities of devotee, one is Surup Lakshana.
29
in 11th canto.
Yeah.
What is that?
Surrender to Krishna.
Surrender to Krishna. In Sanskrit is what?
Krishna.
Shishnaika Sharanam.
Then the question arises is, this I heard from Virgil Buddha, how can you judge some of the other things like not eating too much as well?
Yeah.
How can you judge who's surrendering one?
Exactly.
And so he says, therefore, Bhakti Matsaka is one of his main points there, because this is brought up in the section about Vaishnava Aparat.
Right.
And it's very hard to know who is
surrendered
to Krishna.
Who's not. Yes.
And therefore, be careful.
Yes,
because
right.
Because then he gives the example of Bhakti Matsaka, about Raghunath Das Goswami, when he was in household life. And if you look at him just from the external point of view, he looked like a dollars and cents person.
Exactly.
And then Virgin gives the example, he saw Prabhupada on a train in the 1940s with
right.
a mustache and trying to figure out, you know, the accounts for his
right.
pharmaceutical business. Would you consider him a Vaishnava or not? You can't just tell by the external.
Exactly. That's
so therefore, he concludes that Bhakti Matsaka's point is, Really be careful.
We don't know who is the heart of the devotees here, that he may have faults, even so many faults and even fall down, but what is in his heart actually? Is he He's sincerely begging to Krishna. Just, yes. The Sankirtan is bringing up the example, well, yes, yeah, so maybe they're blaspheming or they got the wrong philosophy, but actually, in their heart...
I'm just asking if that falls in that same
category. Does that fall in the category of people that Vajra Bihari, we should be careful of them? Maybe in another way. You could be careful of them in another way.
You want to be careful, you want to find out at least
yes.
Before you
blaspheme. Yeah.
Before,
Vajra Bihari, should I quote you?
You
quote
whatever you want.
Okay. He says, be careful you before you blast them. Those who have different philosophies and who are blaspheming. But we did discuss in one class, don't criticize someone who's criticizing. If you criticize someone who's criticizing, that's also an offense. And if you criticize the person who's criticizing the devotees, the one who's criticizing, that's also an offense. Someone says that, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur?
Once then,
yes, wait and see. Just stick to your own devotional service. Why you worry about everybody else? Stick to your own business. Yeah. Yes, it's the best. Maringo Pop. Yeah. Mahatma again. Yes, Mahatma quality. They're all pure devotees. Okay, last two. One.
Again, if those gurus, the gurus who are disciples, then that's also defined as...
The gurus are entitled to... Yes, that's a point. Yes. In Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that. If you're the guru, you have a right to chastise. Krishna chastised Arjuna to rectify. But if you're not the guru, you don't have a right. You may think you're the guru, or you may think you're on a higher platform, or in some way or other, age, or amount of years in ISKCON, or whatever, different Prabhupada disciple, but that doesn't give you the right to chastise, or correct, even.
So we should stop somebody who wants to chastise us, who is not our guru, but who wants to be full of Ishwara Bhakti and wants to chastise you.
Okay, well, we'll discuss that after class, because we're over time right now, and I only gave for two people, so Parvati's next. Arguing and blasphemy. Yes.
He said, because he had some Mayavadi upbringing, he always used to argue with
Monsieur Prabhupada, right.
Always. And argue back and forth, and Prabhupada wouldn't, give the proper answers, but he would still argue. And he was, like he said, he thought of himself as Prabhupada's driver. There was some place to go to a program. He was very attached to him. They would take him. But every time he would argue,
So much affection. Okay, so later he became, and then he really regretted after Prabhupada left. Yeah, from Kirtanand Swami. Yes.
And then Radha.
No, Dr. Patil was, they were more like intimate, very intimate.
They were equals.
They were equals, yeah. And
their age was somewhat.
Yeah, he was, but he considered Prabhupada his older brother. And he said, Prabhupada told me that we were brothers in some life. And
as long as I was living in Bombay,
no.
He was coming on the Lord's here every morning.
No, he never took initiation, but he just loved to argue with Prabhupada and walk on the beach. And Prabhupada would call him a mudha all the time. And one time, and sometimes he wouldn't come back, and sometimes then he would come back. Yeah, they had this love-hate relationship, kind of.
I just kept listening, you always criticize Prabhupada for smashing too much. You're smashing too much.
Yes, yes. Dr. Patel, he was always... They were like equals. Okay, I have something. We'll stop the class here. We're over time. And the schedule is posted on the board. And perhaps everybody got a schedule. I don't know. There's something I just want to give all of you before you leave. This is a page from this book. And it's a prayer by Devaki Nandan. So by saying this prayer, you can become forgiven by from all your offenses to the Vaishnavas. So yes, this is for everybody. No, it's kind of in Bengali. It's not. Yeah, perhaps. So you can have this. You can read it at your leisure, and you can say it if you like. Because the place the place, his place in Navadvipa is also a sacred place. That he was a Vaishnava Parat. He offended, who did he offend? Shivas Pandit. This devotee offended Shivas Pandit, and later he was forgiven by Lord Chaitanya, Devakinandan. And later on he did Vaishnava Seva for Vakreshwara Pandit, and he was forgiven by Lord Chaitanya. Oh, Devananda. Well, his maybe his initiated name. I don't know. Anyway, Devakinandan. Okay, Devakinandan. I don't know if it's the same one. Yes.
Someone once asked this Giriraj Swami about, well, you know, sometimes you can find so many devotees, you don't even know where they are on the planet, what do you do?
Yes.
And his answer was, well, if you serve Prabhupada at ISKCON, then those devotees that you offended are affectionate to Prabhupada at ISKCON, so they'll forgive you.
Okay.
Do service to people that they love.
So do service to people in ISKCON to be forgiven from your offenses. And that was the remedy, is with the same mouth that you have blasphemed, the same mouth you glorify. So this... every day. Just so we cover it every day. Okay, all glories to Shri Prabhupada. Jai.